Hello, everyone. My name is Doug Koch. I'm from Colon Institute, Baylor College of Medicine, and I'm introducing the series on IOLs, What Every Surgeon Should Know. And I'm thrilled for our very first session to have Liliana Werner to talk to us about IOL biomaterials. Liliana is the Benning Presidential Endowed Chair and Co-Director of the Intermountain Ocular Research Center at Moran Eye Institute in Salt Lake City. And I don't think there's anybody in the world that knows more about biomaterials than Liliana. So Liliana, welcome.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Doug. And this is so much fun to be here, and it's really a pleasure. Thank you.
Sure. So tell us a little bit about the biomaterials that we kind of use now in all our IOLs. What are the categories and kind of what do we need to know a little bit about?
Yeah, so in general terms, I think there are two classes of biomaterials currently being used for the manufacture of IOLs, and we categorize them in acrylic or silicone lenses. So the acrylic lenses, they may be rigid, so these are lenses made of PMMA, or the acrylic lenses can be foldable, and usually we describe the foldable acrylic lenses according to surface and bulk properties. We divide them into hydrophilic acrylic or hydrophobic acrylic. So all the silicone lenses, so this is the second class of material, they are all foldable. But what's really important to know is that each hydrophilic acrylic lens, hydrophobic acrylic lens, they are not the same. These are just general classes of materials. So you can use different copolymers to manufacture those lenses, and then you're going to generate different properties like refractive index, mechanical properties. And in the same way with silicone lenses, they are not all the same. So there are different generations of silicone materials that have been used in the manufacture of silicone lenses. And usually the more modern silicone lenses will have materials with a slightly higher refractive index.
So, you know, in the U.S., we use a lot of hydrophobic foldable acrylics, don't we? We use very few hydrophilics in the U.S., whereas outside of the United States, particularly in Europe, I think there's still a pretty intense use of hydrophilic acrylics, and they like them because there's maybe a little less glare, they're maybe less expensive to manufacture. Why don't we go for them as much in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I think the hydrophilic acrylic materials, they are very flexible. So they're used in the manufacture of those lenses. They are very thin for insertion in through incisions that are sub 2 millimeters. I think this is quite popular in Europe. What I believe, I think it's possible that in the United States, they are not so popular because of the issue of calcification. So this is a class of material that has a higher tendency to calcify. And I'm not saying that all hydrophilic acrylic lenses are going to calcify. It's not like that. Actually, if you consider the rate of calcification, this is probably actually low. However, I see them every single week because we receive explanted lenses from everywhere in the world. And the issue of calcification is very interesting because there are some instances where you have a relatively large number of the same lens from the same manufacturer that gets to calcify. And usually this is because there was some change in the manufacture procedure or polishing or something like that. But also there is a form of calcification that's a bit different, the localized form of calcification in a round area on the anterior optic surface and subsurface. And we have been observing this with any hydrophilic acrylic lens. It's not related to any particular manufacturer. And this is usually secondary to some secondary surgery. And initially we saw this after surgeries like the MEC or the SEC with a lot of injection of air or gas inside of the anterior chamber. But then we saw the same exact pattern after secondary surgeries in the posterior segment, like any retinal surgery, for example, or even intravitreal injections. And that's the question. I mean, do we always know if our patients are going to need a secondary surgery down the road? And that's what I think is a little bit more problematic. This is not related to a specific manufacturer. You can see this with any hydrophilic acrylic lens.
Yeah, that's so interesting that it occurs. Something happens in the vitreous, but it calcifies on the anterior surface.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to point out, you know, that we remove lenses of all types, don't we? I mean, you get lenses of all types removed for all reasons, whether it's optical, negative dysphotopsia, glare, other all kinds of reasons, and calcification is just added to the list. And I think that in the U.S., the play on that has kind of influenced our use of them. And you also pointed out that there's another type of IOL that can calcify, which is silicone. And your paper was really pathfinding in that regard. Want to tell us about that?
That's interesting, too, because silicone lenses may also calcify, but we always observe that in eyes with asteroid hyalosis. And the calcification is a bit different because the calcified deposits are only on the posterior optic surface. They're very superficial. You actually can remove them with the YAG laser. But because you have this huge supply of calcium and phosphate in the vitreous, then there will be a reaccumulation of deposits after that. So, yeah, silicone lenses can calcify too. However, hydrophobic acrylic lenses, to the best of my knowledge, I never saw one case of calcification of hydrophobic acrylic lens proved by a laboratory analysis of the explanted lens. I heard about cases, but I never saw one that was really proved.
Yeah, and I think that categorizes or determines why we're so into using those lenses. First of all, they were just so... You did make the point that we have a lot of variety in these materials, don't we? We have, in the U.S., we have three hydrophobic acrylic materials that are most popular now, Alcon, Clarion, and the J&J Technis, and then the Bausch & Lomb and Vista models. Any particular differences you want to point out to us as surgeons that we need to know about?
Yeah, that's a very good point, because what was usually considered standard for hydrophobic acrylic materials, so standard hydrophobic acrylic lenses, would have a water content of less than 0.5%, like, for example, the Acrysoft material for Alcon. But since some time, we have the new generation of hydrophobic acrylic materials with higher water content. And there are different materials. They range in general from 1.5% to up to 7% water content, but they are still hydrophobic acrylic lenses. And the interest of those lenses is that they are not prone to hydration-related phenomena like glistenings and subsurface nanoglistenings. And this phenomenon, I mean, rarely they led to explantation in any way, but you would not want to see those microvacuoles and whitish aspects of the IOL optic under a slit lamp examination. And if you have a lot of those, there is always a potential for increased light scattering. So again, the interest of these materials is that they are not prone to those phenomena.
Yeah, in my experience, it seemed to be most problematic in patients who got multifocal designs with these that develop the glistenings in the subsurface nanoglistenings because of the combination of the division of light and the compounded by the scatter from the surface and from the IOL. So we got a kind of a new kit on the block of materials, a material that we can alter postoperatively. You want to make tell us a little bit about the light adjustable lens material?
Yeah, sure. So we did all the preclinical studies, actually, of this material in our lab in the rabbit model for some years, but it's already available. It's FDA approved. So the light adjustable lens is made of a silicone material that contains some unpolymerized molecules that can move inside of the optic upon application of near UV light. So with that, in the postoperative period, you can adjust the power of the intraocular lens in a non-invasive manner with something extremely exciting. That's a very interesting lens. It's growing in the market. It's very important to highlight that the patients really have to wear those UV protective glasses until the final lock-in of the power of this lens. And there is some evidence already in the literature that even with the new light adjustable lens with the active shield, you may have uncontrolled polymerization if you are exposed to outdoor light. So the compliance with that is quite important. Yeah.
Yeah. Mitch Weickert, our group, has published a case report in Journal of Cataract and Refractive Surgery case reports about a patient who had the new version with Active Shield and did not wear those glasses outdoors and had a very wild looking appearance. Looking down the road, what's coming? I know there are new materials being developed by some of the companies here in the U.S., some, in, of course, in China. Anything you want to tell us about what you might think we would look forward to?
Yeah, it's interesting because now there is a new class of materials that has recently been described. And this is based on cross-linked polyiso butylene. And this is a material that's being used for the manufacture of an IOL in China. And if you consider all the parameters such as refractive index, mechanical properties, and things like that, this is basically a very hydrophobic material, very flexible material with a relatively high refractive index and low chromatic aberration. So interesting characteristics. If you check the JCRS, the September and October issues, you are going to find some papers about this material. One is a preclinical rabbit study showing biocompatibility that's similar to a standard hydrophobic acrylic lens. And the other paper is a clinical study with a limited number of patients, but the patients were followed for 1 year showing promising results. So I'm looking forward to more results and longer term, of course. But it's interesting to have a new material.
It's a great time to be a surgeon and to be a patient in our world. All of these lenses are wonderful. They all have their advantages and their unique advantages, and there are times you have to might be segue to something else, but it's great to know that we have great materials and more coming.
Yeah.
Liliana, thank you so much. That was a whole encyclopedia of IOL biomaterials in 10 minutes. Thanks.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Again, it was a pleasure.